Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. There was controversy this week over the appointment of a new chancellor to the SUNY system. Angry students say they had no input into that decision. Some doctors have threatened to take the New York State Health Commissioner to court. A call to take wine coolers off supermarket shelves, and New York State is tops when it comes to those who travel. We'll have these stories and much, much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. Angry students upset over the appointment of Bruce Johnstone as the new chancellor of the largest university system in the country protested in Albany this week. David Galletly has the story.
The 47-year-old Johnstone has been president of Buffalo State College for the past 9 years. He was elected chancellor by the SUNY Board of Trustees to replace Clifton Wharton, who resigned in February 1987. About 45 students attended the trustees' meeting in Albany, where Johnstone was officially appointed. The students have accused him of being insensitive to student needs and of failing to improve the lot of minorities at the Buffalo State campus. Sarah Jean Rosito is vice president for campus affairs of SASU, the student association of the State University, and a student at Purchase.
Really concerned about the issues of minority recruitment and retention. We're really concerned about some interviews that he's done where he's talked about the phase-out of tuition being an idealistic plan, as well as the fact that he thinks that tuition increases should be much more, not necessarily yearly, but more regular. We're concerned about that because we want higher education to be accessible to all students. And we think that the federal government is not making the commitment through financial aid. The state government isn't necessarily making the commitment by giving more money for better programs, and that it should not necessarily come out of students' pockets, because it has to be accessible to all people, and that we're looking towards the economic future of New York State.
Johnstone says he hopes that differences can be worked out between himself and the students, and denies their charges, saying he has done a lot of work on behalf of minorities.
Again, in respect to the students who have demonstrated today, the fact that, for example, some felt my campus inadequate and therefore me inadequate because we only have about 11% minority students, and they thought we should have 41% because they thought that was the appropriate catchment. I think it's so clear that that's a mistaken bit of information that I would hope that some of the students who based an initial view on what I think can be so quickly demonstrated to have been wrong would be willing to themselves grow and change that view. I think if students knew, which they clearly don't now, if the students knew what I had done in minority student recruitment, if students knew that I have been, I believe to date, the only SUNY campus president recruiting among minority students and agencies in New York City, if they knew of the special minority honors in scholars programs that we've formed at Buffalo State College, which I think they don't, it's not to their fault, they don't know that. I think it is somewhat to their discredit that they don't seem to care.
Johnstone was chosen after a nationwide search. Rosito says the students have objected to the selection process, contending students should have had a say in the appointment. The SUNY system has 64 campuses and 370,000 students. Johnstone, who will take over in August, is the eighth chancellor in the university's 40-year history. I'm Dave Galletly in Albany.
Three surgeons groups have taken New York State Health Commissioner David Axelrod an ultimatum. Either declare AIDS a communicable or a sexually transmissible disease, or face a lawsuit. A report now from Bruce Robertson.
AIDS is currently considered a reportable disease. That means that doctors and hospitals are required to report the incidence of AIDS to the state, and AIDS testing is not mandatory. What may seem like just a question of wording has important public policy implications. The surgeons say listing the disease as communicable would force health officials to take a more active role in stopping its spread. Francis McKee is the executive director of the Societies of Surgeons, Orthopedic Surgeons, and Obstetricians and Gynecologists.
Our feeling is the AIDS is presently incurable. It is really there are no prospects on the horizon at this point to find a cure. That being the case, the only thing that can be done at this point is to prevent transmission. We feel that if you declare AIDS to be both sexually transmissible and communicable and put it on that list, all of the measures, the epidemiological measures that are set out in the public health law for those type of diseases would come into play. And at least, even if we can't cure it, we can prevent its spread to some extent.
Dr. David Axelrod has opposed the legislation, and Health Department spokeswoman Frances Tarleton says it could be dangerous to declare AIDS communicable because it would give local health directors broad powers, for instance, to quarantine AIDS sufferers and prevent children from going to school. She says the department has, however, listened to the surgeons' groups.
Basically, a lot of the issues that have been raised by the societies, I think, have already been taken into account in the state's AIDS policies. We do allow county health departments to carry out contact tracing with the consent of the individual. Mandatory testing is something that has not been adopted in New York State for a number of reasons. I think we're encouraging physicians, if they have a high-risk patient, particularly a woman who might be pregnant, to counsel her about testing, encourage her to get tested. We also would feel the same way about other patients who might be undergoing medical procedures that could be that could cause harm. So there are we don't feel that that mandatory testing would be positive in efforts to prevent AIDS. It would drive people who are perhaps infected away from the medical system.
Frances Tarleton of the New York State Health Department. The surgeons groups, however, according to McKee, would like to see more frequent AIDS testing done in the state. Representatives of the surgeons groups, claiming they represent 2,000 members, say they'll take Dr. David Axelrod to court by May 10th if he doesn't make the change. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Beth Engler reports that New York State lawmakers are up in arms over a survey that shows children are drinking wine coolers.
More than one quarter of fourth graders, one third of fifth graders, and 4 in 10 sixth graders say their peers drink wine coolers on a regular basis. That's according to a recently released national survey by the classroom newspaper Weekly Reader. This has one New York State lawmaker up in arms, and he's doing what he can to get the sweet soda-like alcoholic beverage off the grocery store shelves. State Senator Frank Padovan has introduced a bill to repeal an existing law which allows the presence of this product in our supermarkets. Ed DeCosmo, spokesman for the senator, says that wine coolers are practically marketed toward the children.
Now, the wine cooler seems to be a product that is consumed and used very heavily by very young children. We're talking about fourth and fifth and sixth graders who've identified that, reported that they and their peers are drinking wine coolers. So this is a very young group that seems to be attracted to it. And the whole marketing of the wine cooler seems to be the type of marketing that appeals to children.
The law passed in 1985 was designed to help New York State grape growers. DeCosmo says, though, that what it's done is introduced children to alcohol.
The law allowing wine cooler sales in grocery stores was passed specifically to assist the New York wine industry, growers as well as distributors. It resulted in an increased per-ton cost or per-ton price of grapes in New York State. The problem that they had in 85 no longer exists. Senator Padovan expects strong opposition to it, not just from the growers, but also from the producers of wine in New York, which are large companies for the most part, and also from the industry. Today, the way that the conglomerates are established, you've got large corporations are selling both, are selling liquor and also distributing and selling wine as well. So they're all involved in wine coolers now. The opposition is expected to be strong.
That was Ed DeCosmo, spokesman for Senator Frank Padovan. And there are others who feel the same way. Harry Dokmajian, the chairman of the Federation of New York State Package Stores Association, had this reaction to the news.
We told you so. We said this initially when this legislation was being promoted several years back on these wine coolers, that a new category of drinker would be created. And it would be a category of those probably under the legal drinking age because they could acquire it so readily at outlets where this product shouldn't be. And now it's a situation of, we told you so.
Dokmajian says that wine coolers never should have been sold in supermarkets in the first place, and he supports a movement to remove them from the shelves. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Beth Angler.
As always, I had my stimulating chat with Fred Dicker, state editor of the New York Post this week.
Is there a postpartum depression going on since the since it has become clear Cuomo ain't going to be it?
Well, you combine that with the fact that this budget agreement that just took place here, Alan, really wasn't much of an agreement on anything except to put off some serious decisions. And you do have something of, I wouldn't know about postpartum, but you do have a post-budget depression with a lot of people walking around saying, oh, it's terrible, we're not getting our spring recess, and oh, it's terrible, we're not doing anything of consequence. I heard on the radio today that up here in Albany, some New York City assemblyman apparently was running around some shopping centers trying to get arrested to make his point that you can't hand out leaflets in shopping centers legally. It's reached that kind of point of desperation where to get attention, they'll even try to get arrested these days at shopping centers.
So they say you got to walk naked through the legislature leading an elephant.
Well, sad but true at times. Most of these people here are basically ciphers. There's very little creativity. And as we both know, I think, there's an awful lot of ego and frustration on the part of politicians who want attention.
Freddie, this week there was an AP story, perhaps part of the same syndrome of nothing else to write about, that you said that indicated Warren Anderson had indicated he was thinking about either running or not running again, yeah, as the case may be. Then I talked to several of his people, and they said, don't count on it.
Oh, well, look, it's like the Swallows coming back to Capistrano. Every 2 years around this time, Warren Anderson plays a little game and hints that maybe he won't seek re-election. I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to see who will come out with a premature press release applauding his statesmanlike decision not to run so he can get even with that person. I don't think there's any doubt that Warren Anderson will seek re-election. I mean, on the one hand, you can't concede, as we all do, that he's the most powerful Republican in New York State, and then on the other hand, think he's just going to up and walk away from that. I think he enjoys what he's doing too much.
And some of the unfinished business of the legislature, minority contracts.
Sure. Well, there are a variety of things. We could talk about them individually. One of the biggest, you may remember it from 2 or 3 years ago, was the whole issue of medical malpractice insurance and the runaway costs for doctors of that. That's supposed to be resolved this year, and it hasn't. You, I know, were saying that the big issue of this session was going to be solid waste management. Now, I think we both know we haven't heard too much about it yet. And I'm sure you won't turn out to be wrong, Alan, because I only rarely remember when you've been wrong, but I suspect that's going to come up. And there are a whole bunch of other things. Budget allocations haven't been dealt with. Minority business enterprise, sure. I mean, a lot of people think that's an invitation to crime and fraud because there aren't enough minority-owned businesses to go around now. If you try mandating on local governments, as this bill would do, requirement that they hire even more minority businesses, you're going to wind up perhaps with another WedTech type scandal at reference to that big Bronx military contractor.
Which is a minority-owned firm.
Yes, yeah.
Some people
know, it's
think
steeped in scandal now.
Some people,
obviously.
So that if there are areas where there are not, if there were areas where there are contracts but not minority firms, they have to get made specially sometimes. White entrepreneurs specifically set up black sort of dummy corporations that do that.
Sure.
We've seen that kind of thing in the past.
Sure. It's a confused session. I mean, the mood, the sort of zeitgeist of the universe that we travel in here, of the legislature and the executive branch, is very unusual this year. It's almost sort of like a reaction to the intensity of last year's scandals. And there does seem to be, to some degree, a paralysis of leadership here on everybody's part, including the governor, who for a while seemed to be a bit preoccupied with the national politics and a little less so with what was going on here.
There's a rumor going around that the district attorney in New York, Robert Morgenthau, is looking at the other house, the assembly now. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, Alan, I mean, he has been doing that. He's been admitting it. I think what you've picked up is this fact that in the last 3 or 4 weeks, there have been, according to people I speak with, some new subpoenas issued for documents out of the state assembly, and that once again is fueling speculation that we haven't heard the last of indictments of state lawmakers from the Manhattan District Attorney. And in fact, you know, within the next month or two, while the legislature's here, many insiders believe that there may be some more indictments. Now, if that happens, then the mood down here, as we both know, will change radically and very quickly.
And the big guessing game, of course, is when they go home.
Yeah, I mean, right now the governor was joking that he's prepared to be here in August. I'm not so sure it's a joke. The latest session, I think probably in history, but certainly in recent history, was, I believe, last year's, which went to around July 15th. But there's nothing automatically that prevents it from going to July 20th or July 30th. This summer, we have the national political conventions, but there's no reason why the legislature can't take a week off and let the Democrats go to Atlanta, and then the Republicans go to New Orleans, and then come back.
Mm-hmm. My dollar would say June 15th.
Well, I think that's a very good bet, Alan. I'd say June 16th.
As you know, Warren Anderson has in the past put on his coat and say, okay, we're going home.
Yeah.
That could happen this year, too.
Yeah, well, the question is not will he put it on, but when he puts it on. He always puts it on, no matter how late or how early. There are many, many serious issues that these lawmakers are divided over. And unless there's a crisis, they usually like to put decisions off.
Fred Dicker, you're the guy who has been credited by many with having raised the entire ethics question that it has swept the legislature last year. It's almost as if it never happened this year. There was an ethics bill that people on both reform and do something to help us sides have said that ought to be changed. Is there any mood for changing last year's ethics bill?
Not at all. I mean, there was no real mood for passing last year's ethics bill until the egregious violations of ethical standards became clear last year. I would feel certain, Alan, and I think you would agree with me on this, that behind the scenes there are tinkering going on, some small changes with the ethics bill of last year to probably make it a bit more rational, but there's no effort of any significance, neither led by the governor nor led by anybody else, to strengthen the bill, to address probably the most blatant conflicts of interest and potential illegalities that go on in this place, and that is lawyers, big-shot lawyers, who are also state lawmakers, who are making hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, through their private law firms by doing business with businesses that do business with New York State. I think there's probably no better example than a story that I'm pleased to say I disclosed just a couple of months ago, which showed that Assembly Speaker Melvin Miller of Brooklyn, through his law firm, was actively soliciting business from Citibank, the nation's largest bank, at the same time when Miller and Miller's people are handling legislation right this minute, right this year, that affects Citibank's ability to make profits. I mean, if there's ever a more blatant conflict of interest than that, I can't think of it.
And finally, Fred, a report card on our new speaker, Mel Miller.
Well, you know, just the other day I was apprised of some very interesting comments made by Assemblyman Maurice Hinchey of Ulster County, a Democrat who obviously is part of Speaker Miller's Democratic team, in which he said that...
And an early supporter of Miller.
That's right. And he indicated from this interview, which I think was with the Kingston Freeman, that Miller, if he makes one more mistake, might find himself being ousted. And I think Maurice Hinchey also said that he was embarrassed every time, or embarrassed for Miller, every time Miller appeared in public because he seemed to be sort of so maladroit at it. I don't know. Nobody wants to challenge a speaker. The way the system works here, Alan, as we both know, is that if you express any independence publicly, you could get your head cut off figuratively. You can be stripped of certain benefits you have, financial benefits, prestige benefits, and therefore it's a system which sort of compels sheepishness. And that's one of the explanations for the lack of mavericks around the New York State Legislature. Basically, it's the Speaker of the Assembly and the Majority Leader of the Senate who control everything. However, if Miller messes up even worse than he did last year, there's always a chance for an uprising.
Fred Dicker, State Editor of the New York Post. In other news this week, the New York State Thruway Authority is remaining quiet on the federal report that says that the April 1987 bridge collapse on the state thruway probably wouldn't have happened if the Thruway Authority had properly maintained the bridge support. Bernard Loeb is Deputy Director of the National Transportation Safety Board's Bureau of Accident Investigation. He said that the Thruway Authority knew for years that stone riprap had washed away from the bridge's pier footings. But he said the agency didn't replace the boulders when it rehabilitated the bridge in 1981. The NTSB concluded that the probable cause of the bridge collapse was the failure to replace the riprap boulders. The board urged the inspection of similar bridges. Loeb estimated that there are 10,000 to 40,000 similar bridges around the country. In other news, the New York State Senate has approved a controversial new measure that could mean more handguns might show up on the streets of New York City. Bruce Robertson is back now with this report.
Sponsors of the bill in the Senate have argued that special prohibitions against handgun possession created by New York City are both arbitrary and unfair. Newburgh Republican Senator Richard Schermerhorn maintains it's a constitutional issue.
If you get a city pistol permit, you can carry it in my county. But if I get a state permit, and I can't carry it in the city. So why should the city be any different?
Current law dictates that a license to carry a firearm outside of New York City is not valid in the city unless a special permit is issued by the police commissioner. Schermerhorn says the right to protection is just as necessary in New York City as in any other part of the state.
If you're walking in the streets at night, it's not the safest place in this world. And I see no reason why you shouldn't have it for protection. Just for protection, that's all.
James Brenner, New York City Mayor Ed Koch's legislative representative, says the city is opposed to the bill because of the unique problems in the city.
I believe one has to take into consideration the density of the population. 40% of the state's population are concentrated into a very small area. And in the interest of public safety, the police commissioner feels that it is mandatory on him to have control over all of the licensing provisions to carry handguns in the city.
Senator Schermerhorn argues that handgun licenses are granted by the state only after an applicant meets a certain number of requirements, and then the license is approved by a judge. However, Brenner says that just because a person is licensed in one jurisdiction, that does not mean that he or she meets the requirements in another jurisdiction.
I believe that the uniqueness of the density of the population and the closeness in which people travel and move about the city, particularly on the transportation systems, clearly promotes a different rule for that kind of an area.
The bill will now go to the Assembly, and if approved there, it then must be signed by Governor Cuomo. Its chances of final passage in the Assembly, however, are not considered good. This is Bruce Robertson.
I love New York, and apparently so do many other people. Paul Rosenthal prepared this report on the popularity of the Empire State.
New York State is the king of the hill and the top of the heap, or at least tied with Florida as the number one visited state by Americans who decide to travel this country. A study by American Demographics magazine shows that some 63% of all Americans have either visited or lived in New York. The same figure holds for Florida. Pennsylvania and Illinois were close behind with 59%. California rounded out the top five with 57%. Bern Rotman, spokesman for the I Love New York program, says that the results are wonderful.
Well, every time we hear people saying, I love New York, we are filled with a flood of happiness and gratitude, obviously. We feel that New York State has such infinite variety for visitors that it doesn't surprise us terribly that that most people in the United States feel that way as well. I think when one also contrasts what New York State's attraction is versus what Florida's attraction, because we're ranked up there on top together, I think it's particularly gratifying to note that Florida is what's known as a 12-month vacation destination. That is, it's a warm weather destination, and New York State is a cold weather destination, meaning that we have four seasons, that the vast majority of the travelers who come to the state do so in the summer months. It's carried on through the few months, the few weeks, I should say, of the beautiful foliage season. But after that, the early spring and the winter time, except for those people who love the outdoor sports of downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, and so forth, it's relatively quiet. Now, that's one side of it, and the other side, of course, that is particularly advantageous to New York State is that we happen to have New York City in New York State. And New York City is the number one destination worldwide for travelers from any place in the world, let alone the United States, both for pleasure and for business. And the combination of the two, a tremendously interesting, pleasurable state for recreational travel of the kind of people who like mountains and waters and getting away from it all, and the people who like the glitz and the glamour and the excitement and the attractions that make up New York City, makes for a combination of a vacation and business destination that's unparalleled.
Robin says that most people come to the Empire State from other northeastern states and Quebec and Ontario provinces. Rodman says this is because nearly 85% of Americans who travel in the U.S. do so by automobile and do not drive for more than a day or two. And what about the price? Rodman says New York State is very competitive with other states.
Cost of doing business and the price for having a vacation in many parts of the state are absolutely competitive with almost any part of the country, and you get what you pay for. If you want to have a very rustic vacation in New York State, believe me, it'll cost you no more than a rustic vacation almost any place else in the country.
As far as New York City goes, Rotman says package tours and airline competition can make the Big Apple quite reasonable and competitive with other major cities. Being number one is a nice place to be, says Rotman, but attaining that position is just half the battle. Staying there is the hard part. Rotman says that I Love New York will now attempt to get the remaining 37% to come to the Empire State.
And if they've never set foot in New York State before, those 37 people, we say, we love New York, and we know that if you'll make the trip, you'll love it too.
Bern Rotman of the I Love New York program. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show was produced by Beth Engler. She had help this week from Bruce Robertson, Paul Rosenthal, and David Gillette. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll tune in again next week to hear what's happening in and around the Empire State. Until then, I'm Alan Chartock.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartock is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the Legislative Gazette, a weekly newspaper on state politics, with student internships available.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.